Welcome to Let's Talk ETFs. I'm your host, Jason Kapoor, and I've been monitoring the investment space throughout my entire career. Here at Seeking Alpha, I'm an ETF strategist, and my role is to uncover and bring forward news and information to the investor community that is meaningful and actionable. Each week, a different guest and I will take an in-depth look at a particular aspect of the rapidly evolving exchange-traded fund space, with a focus on how investors can best utilize ETFs to reach their investment goals. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. This podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Nothing said here should be taken as investment advice. All opinions expressed on this show are those of individuals expressing them alone. A full set of disclosures will be included at the end of this show. You can subscribe to Let's Talk ETFs on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platforms you prefer.
For reference purposes, this podcast is being recorded on the afternoon of July 30th, 2021. Our guest joining the podcast today is John Patrick Lee, who is the product manager over at VanEck. John has a degree from William & Mary, and is also a chartered financial analyst. Moreover, he's been with VanEck for over 7 years, where his role has progressed over the course of time. Prior to joining VanEck, John worked for Transamerica Financial Group, Dorsey Wright Associates, and the Connors Group. He is also an expert when it comes to ETF product design, where he's done everything from the research end, design work, pricing, and promoting new products to the VanEck audience. We're excited to have him join us today to discuss our topic of how crypto markets and digital transformation are seeping into the exchange traded fund world. So without further introduction, I'd like to welcome John Patrick Lee.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. Very, very happy to be here.
Absolutely. How's everything going there for you today?
It's good. It's not too hot in New York City, and the sky is blue, and it's Friday. So, I mean, I don't have any complaints right now.
Absolutely. Likewise. So, John, usually the best way to kick off our podcasts and the way we like to operate in the beginning is if you could just perhaps shed a little bit more light to our listeners on who you are, kind of on from a day-to-day standpoint at VanEck, what your role consists of, you know, just a better picture of, you know, who John is.
Sure. Well, first of all, I go by JP.
My apologies.
JP Lee. No, it's fine. It's all good. So yeah, JP, I'm a product manager at VanEck. I've been on the ETF product management team for almost 4 years now. Before that, I was in the trade settlements group at VanEck. And prior to that, I worked at Dorsey Wright and Transamerica. Dorsey Wright was my longest tenure before VanEck. And I learned a lot about portfolio construction from a systematic perspective there. They were really focused on momentum strategy. So a diverse background, you could say. And at VanEck, the job that I do can be broken up into three basic parts. It's product management. So managing what products we have now, figuring out competitive analysis, what other products our suite is competing with, marketing, which I would say is like writing blogs and coming up with a narrative of how to promote this product suite that we have. And then finally, product development. So kind of a combination of those first two things, figuring out what's out there, you know, where are there potentially gaps in the market that we could compete in, and then trying to design or work with index partners to come up with ETF solutions that could potentially benefit investors by providing them access to specific segments of the market. So, we're going to talk about the digital transformation ETF today, which is digital assets, digital asset companies. But I'm also, I really cut my teeth on our video gaming and esports ETF, ESPO. So there's a little bit of overlap between the video game space and the digital asset space. So I am definitely kind of tilted towards thematic tech equities right now. And that's what my bread and butter is.
Awesome. Excellent. So JP, obviously digital transformation and even the crypto markets are two different topics that have drawn a lot of attention for different reasons. And I think while the two topics are obviously quite different at one end of the spectrum, you can also find them overlapping in other ends. And I kind of wanted to get your take on the space as a whole and understand how you feel the future fits for, you know, the growing, you know, global digitalized economy where, you know, blockchain and all of this stuff is becoming more and more, I guess you could say, impactful to businesses on a day-to-day operation versus what it might've been 5 years ago, 3 years ago, and kind of what that space looks like moving forward potentially.
Sure. So the way we kind of categorize this ecosystem is a structural long-term growth story. And we're still very early, right? There's not a ton of companies, not like the semiconductor industry or the biotech industry where there's, you know, a million companies out there doing business. There's not a lot of companies out there right now. So we're still very early. And when I say structural long-term growth, I mean, it's not happening in a bubble. It's not just Bitcoin and it's not just Ethereum, right? And the thing I really emphasize is what we're seeing is widespread adoption of the technology, the blockchain technology, not just by retail, but also by institutions, right? So you've got this huge upswell of retail adoption. And you see that with something like Coinbase, 56 million verified users that are on the Coinbase platform, you know, maybe not buying and selling all the time, but just interested and invested in some way. And then on the flip side, you've got massive institutional kind of adoption and investment in the space. And that is one of those things that wasn't really there 5 to 6 years ago. It's very easy to pull up, you know, Jamie Dimon headlines from 5 years ago or, you know, whoever it is who are poo-pooing the idea of investing in a digital asset, who are, 2021, all of a sudden launching initiatives and trying to provide access to their customer base. And I think the traditional finance kind of ecosystem, the reason they're doing it is because they see the opportunity and they see the mass adoption on the retail side. So they run the risk of kind of getting left behind, right? If you're an advisor, a financial advisor at, you know, one of the big wirehouses like Merrill Lynch or wherever, you want to be up to speed on that because going back to Coinbase, that's 56 million users is a ton of people. And those people are investing their money on a different platform that exists outside of the traditional financial ecosystem. So, you know, some argue, I think, with this strong evidence that this might be a case of the tail kind of wagging the dog where it's like, institutions may not necessarily want to get invested or get, you know, get dug into the space, but they have to because this is where the world is going, where the population is moving, and they need to play ball if they want to participate in the future economy. So that's kind of the overview. And then opportunities and risks. I mean, the opportunities are in a lot of ways limitless. This is a very disruptive ecosystem. These are early stage companies. There's a future digital economy that's being built out right now, and it's more efficient. It is creating new financial opportunities for investors. The easiest use case for that would be some of the yields that you can get on these decentralized finance swaps, like for example, on a platform like BlockFi, where you can deposit money into a stable coin. That stable coin gets lent out to another investor who's using it for margin, and you're getting high single digit yields on your investment that you can't really get in the traditional finance, you know, like how much are high yield bonds yielding right now, right? Like 3%. So there's new opportunities out there. And then the risks are, I mean, definitely the regulatory risk is definitely front of mind for a lot of this community. The China, you know, crypto ban that's occurred over the last, unfolded over the last 6 months or so kind of shows that what can happen is that the government, if they want to, could make things hard, right? And so that's a risk. And you see that also, again, going back to the BlockFi example, they're having to restrict some of those yield opportunities to specific states within the United States because some states are cracking down, right? So there are huge opportunities and there are definitely risks out there. So it's just a matter of what we're doing now is education, 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 and learning along the way. So that's how I kind of describe the space as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you kind of nailed it on the head with the idea that the institutions are almost forced to adopt, you know, the new way, whether they want to or not, because it is the way the land is shifting under us. And it's either, you know, you adapt or die, whether you like it or not. And although it has some pitfalls that are almost unforeseen for everybody, it's interesting that how much of a buzz and how much of an interest has been growing around that transformation area. So, you know, like you said, I think the opportunities are really limitless. You know, I think the future necessarily, we might not even know what it is yet because those doors in front of us haven't been opened. So
yeah, that's one thing I really kind of like to talk about too, is because when you talk to somebody who is building something new in the digital asset ecosystem, whether, you know, it's a decentralized application, adapt, or whatever, it gets into like science fiction land very quickly. And that you start hearing things like, okay, this is a Google disruptor. Google is under fire from, you know, this new blockchain based, you know, web browser, or Airbnb is under fire because they're just middlemen and they're making a ton of money being middlemen. And the blockchain technology kind of facilitates getting the middlemen out of there and lowering fees, increasing efficiencies, so that somebody who wants to do business can do business with their end user at in a more efficient way and pass on savings to those end users.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess this could be a good segue into, you know, one of VanEck's ETFs that I know that you guys recently launched a few months back, the VanEck Vectors Digital Transformation ETF, ticker DAPP, which appears to address this kind of market area, I guess you could say. Can you walk us through the story around, you know, the designing and idea for this ETF? What made VanEck want to bring this to market and kind of what it's all about?
Sure. So, I mean, as a firm, VanEck is committed to providing forward-looking, intelligently designed strategies that provide investors access, right? That's what we're doing, providing access to a group of companies in a way that makes sense from an investment perspective, like how the portfolio is constructed, but also from a big picture perspective, right? We're providing access to an early stage growth space that is dynamic. It is, you know, we believe it has legs. So that, I guess you could say, is the philosophy behind it. You know, we are believers in the long-term story of the blockchain ecosystem. And so this is just a way to provide access to the publicly traded equities that are doing business within the space. And I think that's a huge distinction and something to be very, you know, forward about, is that this ETF is, first of all, it's a passive ETF, right? So we're not actively managing it. And then it's providing access to companies. There is no Bitcoin or Ethereum or any other, or, you know, Dogecoin or whatever. There's no actual underlying cryptocurrencies in the portfolio. It's the companies themselves. And one of our very popular and successful ETFs is the gold miner ETF. And it's kind of a way to think about it as the gold mining ETF GDX. There's no gold in that portfolio, right? We don't own positions of gold bullion or gold bars in there. It's just the company. So we definitely view the opportunity as different when you look at companies that are doing business in digital assets and then an investment in an underlying digital asset themselves. So that's the long story short on the ETF.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you made that distinction that it's not something that's actively holding Bitcoin or any crypto for that matter. But I guess you could say it's indirectly involved to some level. And I guess taking it a step further, you know, would you be able to provide us with some of the specifications of the actual fund itself? I know you just mentioned that it's passively managed, but what are some of kind of the key holdings that are, you know, maybe really driving the fund? I don't know if you can highlight maybe two specific stocks that you think could separate DAP from others, and, you know, why individuals should kind of rally around it, and, you know, what it offers.
So it's a passive ETF, and the different, you know, passive versus active. I mean, active is when, you know, a portfolio manager or team is saying, look, we're going to overweight, you know, this company, and we're going to exclude that company because we think this company is going to do better, right? That's not what we're doing. So this is a passive ETF that tracks an index. And the index is essentially a theoretical expression of what the digital transformation opportunity is, which is a group of companies that are pure play, which means that the index provider has determined, look, this company, they make over 50% of their revenues from digital assets themselves. So that means they're actually doing business in digital assets. And that's a huge distinction because there's a lot of companies out there. Like, I mean, you pick any one of the conglomerates out there that are dabbling in the digital asset space, or some companies maybe have created some digital asset initiative where they're going to utilize blockchain technology somehow in their business. And it, you know, for a press release, they'll put that out, but the core of their business is not working within the digital asset ecosystem. So the index rules are really what define what the portfolio looks like. And so the index provider says what's out there, what's pure, and then we're going to create a portfolio. So 25 holdings right now. And like I said, this is an early stage. There's not a ton of companies out there. So 24 of the names are what the index provider would be considered pure play. And then there's one name in there, a Taiwan Semiconductor. That's not pure. Those positions are capped. We're trying to keep that exposure as low as possible until the market's full enough so that the portfolio would be completely pure. The index rebalances quarterly. And so, once a quarter, at the end of the quarter, the index provider says, okay, what's the market? And then they'll rebalance to, the new weights. And then the portfolio is off and running again until the next rebalance. So positions are capped at 8%. So we're not trying to overweight any one single position. We're trying to kind of diversify down the market cap. And then I think the only other wrinkle that would be interesting to kind of note is that there's a fast track inclusion for new companies that come to market so that they come into the portfolio more quickly, so that we're not waiting 3 months till till a big name comes in at the rebalance. So an example would be Coinbase lists. So if a company is over $1 billion on the day it lists or IPOs or de-SPACs, and then on that Friday, it's over $1 billion, it'll come into the portfolio on the following Friday. So essentially you're getting minimum 5-day, maximum 10-day to get included in the portfolio for those big names. And there's different ways to slice up, a universe. There's different rules. And it's just kind of very important for investors to understand the rules of your portfolio or your index, because different rules applied to the same universe are going to spit out a different portfolio. So it's important to kind of understand the nuts and bolts of it. And, there's some people in the ETF space that, look under the hood. And looking under the hood, I think a lot of people don't even do the bare minimum research, what are the top 10 holdings? And even just the top 10 holding snapshot can give you a pretty solid idea of what is in the ETF. So with that being said, I think if you want to talk about what kind of names are in the portfolio, what are the kind of marquee names? Coinbase, again, biggest digital asset IPO in history. It was a direct listing. It's 56 million verified users. That is so many people. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if you compare Coinbase users versus Schwab users, the Schwab retail brokerage platform or E-Trade, it's bigger than those normal traditional finance retail operations. And so just that amount of user base is very compelling from an investment case standpoint. So many people engaged in an ecosystem, signed up, not necessarily investing a ton of money every day, but just being there, being interested and signed up, that's a huge deal. And in a lot of ways, Coinbase is kind of like the marquee name in the digital asset ecosystem. Another name that's really exciting is Riot Blockchain. So Riot Blockchain is a Bitcoin miner, and they're the largest US publicly traded miner. They have a lot of very dynamic and compelling, stories that are coming out of Riot. And I think from an investment standpoint, where they are, again, is early stage, a lot of capital investment. They're acquiring facilities that are going to allow them to mine even more Bitcoin. They're investing heavily into kind of an ESG story. Their hydroelectric power, their New York mining facilities is 88% zero emission energy to mine the Bitcoin. And their new Texas facility uses almost 30% solar and wind. So the ESG story has definitely cropped up a lot in the last 6 months. And I think that is an interesting wrinkle. And I think that that's a good conversation to have. And it's a fun conversation to have. And Riot is kind of addressing those questions head on. So Coinbase and Riot are kind of the two companies I like to talk about, but there's a lot of things going on in the underlying index. It's not just miners. It's not just exchanges like Coinbase. You've got hardware producers that are creating the chips that are mining the Bitcoin. You've got financial services companies that are kind of bridging the gap between traditional finance ecosystem and the digital asset financial ecosystem, that would be a company like Silvergate Capital. So there's all these different things going on within the digital assets ecosystem. And this ETF and this index is an expression of all of those companies kind of weighted by market cap. And it's going to change over time. The way the index is today is not the way it's going to be in 3 years. And that's kind of the beauty of the passive index is we're not trying to say, look, the miners are most important. They need to be at 30% and forget about everything else. No, the market is going to do what the market's going to do. And the portfolio is going to reflect what the market is. So that's, I just love talking about the passive side, how it changes over time as things develop.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the aspect that it's kind of, you get a little bit of everything. And the, like you just said, the market's going to dictate what's, I guess, most needed overall from a longer term perspective. And even as we mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, I guess you could say that digital transformation space, you know, it's so new to everybody that it's almost, in a way, you could say more appropriate to use that approach because, you know, to predict something that is, you know, 6 months, a year, 5 years down the road is kind of difficult when it's something that's brand new to everyone. This is not a change where we're adjusting something. It's something completely brand new.
100%. And it's going to be interesting to see the index develop. And if I think from an investment point of view, it's, we don't know where it's going. And there's going to be like, and the financial services, what I would say, the financial services aspect, right? I personally think that's a huge growth opportunity. So there's a certain percentage of the portfolio right now that's kind of dedicated to the financial services segment, separate than exchanges, like actual financial banking, asset management. That whole area could become, you know, be able to support its own ETF in the next 5 years, right? But right now, it's just a segment of this ecosystem. So it's going to grow, it's going to develop. And that's something I really want to hammer home is we are very early still.
Absolutely. So speaking from kind of, I guess you could say, the other side of the fence, what would you say to an investor, an individual out there on the street who may not really say be a full believer in cryptocurrencies, be it themselves as a whole or blockchain technology from an indirect standpoint? But, you know, I know DAP obviously doesn't have direct positions in Bitcoin and crypto itself, but it does have some degree of an indirect investment. But what would you say to someone who really is not a believer or is doesn't really comprehend how it works, you know, why they should have this as part of their portfolio, not necessarily just from Van Eck, but from anyone, why this is an important piece to a portfolio?
The majority of people who kind of take that position, it boils down to demographics in 9 out of 10 cases. And, you know, I mentioned the video game kind of ecosystem earlier, and it's kind of the same thing. So people who are under 40 years old, they may, you know, maybe I'm 38, so I'm not necessarily a digital native, but a 30-year-old is definitely a digital native. The younger generation inherently gets it. They understand that there is value to be had in something that is exists on a blockchain, is a digital item that is immutable and you can't change it. And you could potentially own this item as a digital asset. So it's generational, in my opinion. Somebody who's older, 40 and older, it's much more an educational in nature of saying, look, people are living their lives purely digitally, right? Everybody's on their phone. Everybody's got 10 to 12 hours of screen time a day, if not more. We live in a digital world now, and that's different than we lived in the year 2000 even, right? So we're living in a different world today. And so because of that, it creates new opportunities. There's a different paradigm or mindset or framework that people are using to interact with each other, interact with media, interact with their investments. And, you know, something like the Robinhood phenomenon is a great example of that, right? You know, who are Robinhood's base users? They're young people. They're people who understand, hey, I can just open my mobile phone and start trading and it's no big deal. An older person, for whatever reason, it's just demographics. So I think that going back to the video game example, you know, what is an NFT, right? NFT is a non-fungible token. If you try to explain what a non-fungible token is and why it has value to somebody who's never played a video game in their life, or doesn't understand that concept, it's going to be hard. So NFTs in a lot of ways, in some ways can be argued, the first NFTs were in video games, because you wanted, in his game called Team Fortress 2 back in the, like, I want to say mid-2000s, it was a very popular PC game, and they created a marketplace where you could buy and sell these guns or shields or whatever in the game on a marketplace. So I had this really cool weapon and I would sell it to my friend and I would make $50 or whatever. And then that person would be playing the game with this unique digital item, and it meant something. It had business, you know, it had monetary value to that person, to where he would, you know, buy it on this marketplace. So somebody who plays a video game regularly and understands that they're in this digital world and then they're interacting with this digital world, an NFT just, I mean, it just immediately makes sense. And so, you know, I think it's just education. You know, we do webinars, and, you know, so there's Q&As, and there'll be people in the Q&As. And so I'm doing the webinar and I'm seeing this Q&A feed, and there's, you know, people who are like, this is just, you know, why is this different than tulips? And it's like, people just kind of get stuck on it. And it's just a matter of education and showing the opportunities. And then I think as more real world use case examples come to life, I think that's going to be another thing that turns the corner for some of these people that might be kind of still holding their breath and waiting for everything to go to zero. And a great anecdotal example would be there, you know, there's a person I work with who, you know, would be, I think, described as somebody who's not a Bitcoin, you know, not like a Bitcoin believer, you know, it's kind of, you know, we'll say, we'll take it or leave it. You can have fun with that, but I'm not going to get involved. However, when the, you know, you see the yields on these stablecoin swaps. So this is a person who isn't into Bitcoin, doesn't, you know, isn't necessarily a believer, but he's got a BlockFi account and he's getting yield on stablecoins, because that is a real use application for something that fits into a portfolio and makes sense from a financial perspective. So once there's more of these real use cases, like the stablecoin yield example, I think a lot of people are going to continue to come around, just like Jamie Dimon has, right? So
yeah,
that's how I'd answer that.
Yeah. And I could almost in a way agree with you as an individual. I'm 33 years old. And originally, when I guess you could say the whole space exploded a handful of years back, at first glance, my first thought was, I don't really get this. It's whatever. I didn't want to process it almost. I like blanked it out and be like, it's a phase. It'll whatever, fizzle out. And then I guess once you really start to understand the intricacies of how it actually works and what the implications can have on society.
Yeah.
I believe you almost become, I don't want to say negligent, but you almost have to believe that that's a possibility. Because once you could perceive something to happen, it's only a matter of time before someone makes it happen.
Exactly.
So it boils back to the beginning, the doors are endless. So once you kind of understand a little bit about what that space brings forward, I think that it'll really open the eyes to individuals to then become much more aware of, you know, hey, this should be a part of my portfolio.
And I think one other argument for the real naysayers and the haters out there is that just 56 million people is a ton. And there's something called a network effect, which essentially means, you know, the more people that are using a specific network, the more valuable it is. So just the fact that that many people, and that's just specific to Coinbase, are interested in using it means there is some inherent value in it. Yep. Right. So I think the network effect is also something that you can kind of,
you got to
educate and push.
You got to get on board whether you like it or not. Apparently.
Yeah. 100%.
So I guess this question, I guess, could be a little bit subjective in nature and kind of building off what we were just talking about, you know, where, being that it's, I guess you could say, a thematic approach, where do you see it fitting into, you know, a classic portfolio? You know, usually, you know, you have your stocks, your bonds, and your whatever, however you have your portfolio constructed. This is a complete new area. Where do you see it being plugged in? Do you see it almost, I guess you could say, taking place of other positions or building up upon stuff? You know, where do you see it kind of fit the mesh?
Sure. Okay. So I'll talk about DAP specifically. Sure. So these are, look at the characteristics of the portfolio: early stage, high growth, global. So that's step one. This is a global high growth portfolio, and it fits within, you know, people bucket that kind of sleeve different. It's like a game of semantics, really, but it's high growth, it's early movers. And I think that when you look at the correlation numbers of this particular index versus the broad market, your correlations are, I want to say, in the mid 50s, low 60s. which is good because that's what you want. And, you know, from the modern portfolio theory kind of standpoint, you want something that zigs when the market zags, right? So when you look at the holdings are not well represented in broad market benchmarks or even something like the NASDAQ 100 index. So you don't have these positions in your traditional portfolio, unless you own, you know, one of these kind of ETFs that are, you know, portfolios that's focused on this kind of space. So it's got relatively low correlations with the broad market. It's got low overlap with the broad market, and these are growth companies. So to me, this fits in your, we're trying to generate alpha here. You know, we want these companies to outperform the benchmark. These are not dividend paying stocks that are going to be sleepy, right? So that's where these kind of fit. And it depends on how you construct your portfolio. Some people would say a different name for it or whatever, but this is a high growth sleeve, international or global in nature. It's not just the US, it's all over the world. And then you were looking, you know, in the best case scenario for, you know, price and return outperformance over the market as these companies continue to grow, invest, and develop new tools and use cases and applications that are used by more and more people around the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's a fair way to put it in that kind of high growth global phase. And wherever your portfolio is, you know, you can either have it as a segment or a piece into that division. Is that's a pretty fair way, I believe, to paint that picture. Awesome. And I guess switching gears a little bit, I know we're kind of coming to a little bit of the tail end of the podcast,
but yep.
I did want to obviously bring this question up. You know, everyone, you know, I guess going now talking a little bit more about pure play crypto as itself, obviously VanEck has submitted a prospectus to the SEC, as did many others for the first, you know, US based, Bitcoin and crypto based ETFs. I got to ask you, are we going to see one in 2021? Are we going to have to wait longer? What's holding us up? What's your view?
I think that, you know, as much you, we could, you know, we could both pick a date and who knows, but I think there's a couple things. I think there's a couple things to know here. Okay. So first of all, the timeline is unclear and I am, I am not in any position to make a comment on what the SEC is thinking or saying or, you know, whatever. So I'm not going to sit here prognosticate in that way, but they, you know, what just launched in the last 2 days or 3 days or so was a new mutual fund ETF that provides access to Bitcoin futures. So that to me is a step in the right direction and kind of pointing towards we're moving things along, right? So what I think I want to say, one of the differences between a mutual fund and ETF is that you can kind of close the mutual fund and you fund new money. So you can close it to new money. You can't really do that with an ETF. So that might be one of the things that they're kind of testing the waters. And then as another kind of comment about the ETF, you know, there's like 12 filings out there right now, right? Everybody's got an ETF filing, literally every ETF provider out there has an ETF filing. And so they're not all the same. Some of them, they're providing access to futures. Some of them are providing access to physical Bitcoin that you're going to hold in a, you know, in a cold storage locker or whatever. So they're not all the same. So maybe only the futures get approved. Maybe only the physical get approved. Maybe they both get approved. Maybe they, you know, there's no way to tell what happens or what the timeline is. And then I think the last thing to kind of note is that historically Canada has been more aggressive in their capital markets side where they release kind of newer products before the US does. So the US kind of lets Canada try it out. And they did this with the marijuana stocks. So they let Canada try it out first, which is what Canada has done with no real issues with their Ethereum and Bitcoin ETFs. And I want to say the premiums and the discount premiums on those things have been very tight, right? So the ETF wrapper structure has survived and been okay throughout this volatility that we saw, starting earlier this year in the Bitcoin space. So Canada seems to have pulled it off and it seems to be working just fine. And again, it goes back to education, right? Not only VanEck, but, you know, all these other firms that are trying to get this listed, we're having conversations, positive conversations with the regulators, educating, you know, discussing risks and opportunities, right? So we're all trying to educate investors and then come to market and provide US investors with something that makes sense and that everybody's okay with. So we're all in the same boat. We're all waiting for the green light and it's it's been a lot of fun, you know, having these conversations, educating and learning with the world. So that's what we're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's just interesting all the implications that blockchain could have, even just from, I guess you can say, I don't want to say like an arms race of nature, but it's, you know, you know, like there's this, it's like almost a country battle, you know, who's going to become more adapt to this space. And again, it boils back down to the open-ended possibilities. But I do want to thank you for joining us. And before we kind of wrap everything up, I always want to give our guest, whoever we're speaking with, kind of the last word. If there's anything that you'd like to mention to our listeners out there, perhaps that we didn't discuss, and also obviously where individuals can potentially go to learn more information about Van Eck, learn more information about yourself. That would also be great to share.
Great. Well, I thank you very much for the time and the opportunity to come talk to you. I think my final word would be it's a very exciting time to be, you know, working in the digital asset space. There's a lot of things going on. And I think if you're listening to a podcast like this and you're, you know, actively reading a website like Seeking Alpha and trying to educate yourself, you're already in some ways ahead of the game. So keep your eye on the long ball. And if you want to learn more about Van Eck, the website's vaneck.com. And I'm going to plug my boss here. My boss, Ed Lopez, has a really awesome podcast called Trends with Benefits. So definitely check out Trends with Benefits with Ed Lopez. He's got a lot of great guests and talking about some of the same things, but a lot of different things too. So there's a lot of exciting stuff out there. Keep learning, keep having fun. That's my final word.
Awesome. Absolutely. And we'll make sure to include links to all the information that JP just mentioned in the show notes. But that's going to do it for this episode. I want to thank JP Lee of Van Eck for joining us, and obviously our audience out there for tuning in and listening to this episode around the crypto markets and digital transformation landscape, how it's penetrating the ETF universe and really the markets as a whole. But until next time, this is Jason Kapoor, your host, signing off. Thank you. For disclosure purposes, Jason Kapoor is not long any funds discussed. JP Lee is long Van Eck Vector's Digital Transformation ETF, ticker DAPP.